Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Good. How are you doing, Jimmy?
I'm real good. I'm real good. Thanks for accommodating me last time. I
Yeah,
appreciate
no problem, man.
it. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I told your, is it your drummer? Is it Josh? Is he your
Oh,
drummer?
yeah. No, he's our publicist for this record we're putting out here. But Josh is the man. He's the best.
Okay. All right. All right. I wasn't sure. I don't know why I thought he was your drummer. I don't know. What do I know? Right.
Yeah,
Yeah.
he's cool.
Yeah. But, I told him that, I've had a handful of country players. I've had Vince Gill and Brent Mason and a few other people on my show.
No way. It's so cool.
Yeah. Well, I tend to stay away from country guys simply because they're scary players. I mean, just absolutely scary players. They terrify me. I mean, I don't even know how anybody plays like that. You know what I
100%.
mean?
We're in Nashville this weekend promoting our record, and we were watching the Time Jumpers. You familiar with that
Oh, yeah.
band?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. Me
Yeah.
and our drummer Mark, we were sitting right next to Paul Franklin's steel guitar, and Andy on playing I think he was playing a 295 yesterday. It was insane, dude. Monsters on
Yeah.
the hillbilly horn parts. We were losing our minds.
Yeah, those guys, they used to, did you see them at Third and Lindley? Yeah. Yeah, they were there what, every Monday or every like that. Yeah.
Every Monday at Third and Lindsay, you could go catch like the best band in the world for like $20. It's
Yeah.
awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, I mean, that's the problem with Nashville. The Nashville is loaded with just amazing players, it just blows my mind. It's probably why I don't live there.
Everybody's a beast.
So let's talk about your playing and your history a little bit. I'm curious, you look like a young guy to me. Were you surrounded by country music growing up? I mean, was that the influence in your house, or how did you gravitate towards, that style of playing?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm from Ohio. But my family's from Tennessee. They're from a town called Cookeville. And anyway, my grandparents for sure were that's where I got my country music thing from. But my parents, no, they're rockers. Pink Floyd, Zeppelin, that's what they were pushing on me when I was a kid. But I do remember when I was a little kid, my mom had an Epiphone J45. My dad had got her a guitar for Christmas, but she never played. And I was a little kid to picked it up. And she had an Elvis chord book. So,
Yeah.
I mean, right from the beginning, I've been playing country music sort of since I was a little kid. I, learned like Love Me Tender and all those classic Elvis ballads, learning the cowboy chords and all that. But really, I got all my chops from rock and roll guitar players. That's how I started. And then later on, I kind of got into the cover band thing. I was in a Garth Brooks cover band. It was a lot of fun, and George Strait cover band. And, anyway, I met this guy, Ryan Humbert, and he was into the throwback country thing. Buck Owens, we were talking Buck Owens, Merle Haggard, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, all the greats. And that kind of stuff wasn't happening in Cleveland, where we are located. We got together, Shootout started as a cover band doing that kind of stuff. And right off the rip, first thing, it was like a bolt of lightning, man. The crowd reaction, our feelings, playing that music for other people, it just completely connected. Yeah, man, it's just the thing I've always wanted to do, and thankfully we're able to do that.
Yeah. Well, making this the switch, as a guitar player, because you mentioned, some of the classic bands like Pink Floyd. I'm a huge David Gilmour fan,
Oh, the
huge
best.
Floyd, but to go from playing David Gilmour licks to going and playing, Marty Stewart and Brad Paisley licks, night and day difference in that. So what was the transition like? Because there's a huge learning curve there,
Oh,
because you got to learn a
100%.
completely different picking methods and everything. So what was that process like?
Sure. I do remember the very first time I started getting into it was Guitar World. I was a subscriber to Guitar World, and they had a really awesome Brad Paisley section in Guitar World. I forget what record it was. It's the one with Alcohol on it and Time Well Wasted, I think is the name of the record. Anyway, they had some awesome Brad Paisley transcriptions in there. And there was an online portion. You could go online and a guy would show you how to do the chicken picking thing. But I remember learning the Nervous Breakdown. And I don't know, man. I was a picker to begin with. I really like Paul Gilbert. So I was into really articulate picking. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing with chicken picking. You just start adding your fingertips, you know? And once I figured out that you could take a guitar pick and your fingertips at the same time, the thing came naturally to me, to be completely honest. But yeah, the Nervous Breakdown, I think that's where everybody should start if they want to learn how to do the fast, because it's all open string licks. You know, it's kind of easy to play once you figure out, okay, I hit this string with my pick and then I pull off and then I pick with my fingertip. And man, you could get some fast running lines real easy with just a simple technique like that. But yeah, Brad Paisley, 100% is where I started out learning just his pull off licks, stuff like that.
Now is that the one that's on your YouTube channel that you're playing?
Yeah.
That's you shouldn't be able to have that on there.
Yeah.
That stuff's just, like I said, it's just so scary to me. It really is. I'm not coordinated enough. I mean, maybe it's because I'm an old guy now and I, you know what I mean? And I'm just so rooted in bad habits that, you know, learning how to throw I've always admired it. You know, it's like, I'm secretly, a lot of people don't know I'm a huge country music fan. I'm like a secret closet, you know, country fan, you know, you know, and trying to maintain this identity. Mm-hmm.
Good music's good music. I wouldn't be ashamed at all. Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm only kidding in that. So from an early age, you were doing this, but what was the age when you started to make that transition into the country?
Yeah, I was probably, I mean, I was dabbling when I was 14, 15 years old, but I didn't get seriously into it studying. Like, I feel like a student still, you know, there's just so much to learn. I mean, I'm still learning right now. I transcribe tunes all the time and I'm pulling licks, but yeah, I would say probably 14, 15 years old. I started dabbling with country cover bands and stuff like that. You know, more on the rock side, the 90s country stuff. Brent Mason's, you know, Yeah, man, you could learn so much just by playing. And you think country music's so simple. Dude, it is hard to play.
Yeah.
You go through it. Yeah, you try to learn an Alan Jackson song and tell me, oh, that was easy. Yeah, Brent's stuff's nuts. But yeah, I was probably around that age, I would say I started dabbling.
Yeah. So you realize when you were in Ohio, you guys realized as a band that, you know, making the transition from doing the rock stuff to doing the country stuff was a good move. I mean, what's the from a musician standpoint, what's the audience reaction? I mean, what's the difference in the audience? Because I believe that there is a considerable difference in the audience from going from, you know, a rock cover band to a country band.
100%. Yeah.
So what's the difference? I mean, from your perspective.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, everybody's very nice. It's usually quieter. it's quiet. The gigs are earlier. A lot of times, you know, we play traditional country music. I mean, there's definitely rock and country bands out there, just like a rock band. I wouldn't say there's much of a difference there, but we're more of a traditional band. Anyway, it's an older audience most of the time. You know, a lot of the folks are coming out to hear those classic, you know, Merle Haggard style tunes. But nowadays, I think it's taken off, man. The Americana genre is kind of blowing up, you know, with the Yellowstone. They're putting a lot of really awesome artists, roots-based artists out there. I think there's a need for that kind of music right now. So yeah, I mean, in Nashville, everybody's doing that kind of thing. There is a young crowd out here, of course, a whole scene. But yeah, and at home, we're playing music to folks that typically don't. What I would say they don't like country music, but when they hear us, they say, oh, we like you guys. Yeah. I guess I like country music. And it's weird because, you know, what in my brain, we're playing country music, but to, you know, the normal person, they might not know the difference. So, yeah, it's kind of a wide range of folks.
Yeah. Now, are you formally trained as a musician? Yes. You are? Okay. Where did you go to school or where did you
train? I was self-taught when I first started, and I had a handful of really awesome mentors and guitar teachers. And then I went to Kent State University for guitar study and audio production. So I took the performance part more than I did the audio production part, but it's great, you know, get to make YouTube videos and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you completely understand theory and stuff like that. So are you touring full time now? Is this what you do full time? Do you have a regular job? Do you give lessons on the side? What is it that, you know?
Yeah. We all have side. Yeah. The music's kind of our side hustle, but I mean, we're on a 30-day tour right now.
Yeah.
So this is the first time everybody's, you know, left the nest egg at home, and we're really giving it a shot. But yeah, I have a day job. I'm actually a maintenance guy at an apartment complex during the day. And it's kind of nice because the hours are flexible and I could leave. There's other guys that could take over when I'm not there. And yeah, I teach too. I'm a guitar teacher. I just teach a couple days a week, and I have a YouTube channel. I offer lessons and stuff there and do some Zoom online lessons from time to time. I run sound, you know, that's just how the music right. business is now. We're all hustling, trying to make things happen, you know?
Right. But, everybody's got 50 jobs.
Yep. Yeah, that's always tired, but keep on going. Love it so much. Yeah.
Well, you know, like you said before, I mean, I think the country music market is such a big market. I mean, in comparison to like blues or jazz or, you know, some of those other things where it's just a fraction of a percent of the market. So the opportunity is there. I mean, the only way you get to the place to where, you know, you're doing it full time is you have to just like you're doing right now, you have to go out on the road and you just have to put in your time.
Yeah. Grind it out.
You just have to work it out. Now, is this the album that I heard? I mean, that I saw and everything, is that the first album that you guys have released?
No, we have three records. This newest one's produced by Ray Benson of Asleep at the Wheels, called Stampede. Comes out February 24th.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's coming out this week. I'm not sure when this is, you're going to air this, but yeah, it'll be out probably by the time this is out.
Yeah. Wow. I noticed that you had some pretty heavy hitters participating in the album and that. Why don't you tell us a little bit? I mean, are those relationships you already had? Are those relationships that, you know, maybe a manager or somebody like that brought to the table? How did that come to be?
Sure. So we made this record with Ray Benson of Asleep at the Wheel, one of my absolute favorite bands in the whole world. It was unbelievable to work with the guy. But actually, a mutual friend knew Ray and got us in touch with him. And man, we were coming out of the pandemic, and everybody was kind of slow. Everybody was just easing their way back on the road. It was a weird time. And they happened to be in our neck of the woods in Ohio doing a run of shows, and they had a week off. So they planted themselves in Kent, Ohio, where we're sort of based out of. And we made a record in a week with Ray, and we had all of Asleep at the Wheel. I mean, that's a big band, 10 folks in that band from time, you know, it depends on how many guys are on tour, but it's a huge band. So we had all the auxiliary players with us. We were in a theater in Warren, Ohio with Marty Stewart. He's on the record playing Mando on a tune. And Marty approached me after the gig, talked to me. He's like, man, you're a killer guitar player. Him and Kenny Vaughn came up. The sweetest people in the world. And we were in the middle of making the record. I told him Ray was involved. And he was in. He decided he would do an overdub for us. And we have the great Buddy Miller. He's singing backup vocals on the record. He's a mutual friend of our lead singers, Nashville legend. MD at the, he's played with Emmylou. He's got a great band of his own. His wife, Julie, is amazing. Good friend of ours. And Jim Lauderdale, the Mr. King of Broken Hearts himself's on the record too. Also, again, another mutual friend of the band's. Known him for a long time. And last but not least, Raul Malu of the Mavericks, another friend of the band. He's on our record too, singing some backup vocals. So yeah, it was just amazing to get to work with these legend icons. And I mean, there were, everybody is so kind. We're all, it feels like they were pushing for us, you know, trying to give us a break, help us out, get more exposure to, you know, the classic vintage honky tonk music that we're trying to share with everybody. Yeah. So that's everybody involved with Stampede. It's quite a few folks.
It's gotta be, you know, it had to be satisfying though when Marty Stewart came up to you and, you know, told you that
I just playing. Yeah. I lost my mind, man. I could not believe it. He's one of my, I've opened for Marty probably 5 or 6 times throughout the years, you know. Yeah. And I never had the opportunity to meet him. He just walked up to me. I don't know what it was about that night. Maybe I played good or something. But yeah, he came up. Him and Kenny both came up. They handed me their phone numbers. And they were like, yeah, kid, you're awesome. Just keep working. Kenny actually invited me to his house. I ain't stopped by yet. But he's like, yeah, come over. I'll give you a lesson. We could, you know, chat. But the sweetest people in the world. I can't believe it. How nice they are.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's typically the case. You know, a lot of the people that are at that level and that are pretty genuine people and stuff, mm-hmm. You know, in that, you know, especially, you know, I hate to go back to the whole country music thing, but it's a completely different feel. It's a completely different, you know, atmosphere and, you know, I don't know, mentality or what the hell it is, but, you know, I get around, you know, black metal dudes and it's completely, you know what I mean? It's completely different, you know, get somebody from Norway, just face all painted up and stuff. I mean, I love it, but still, you know, it's not the same in that. So now you guys are out on the road in that. I mean, let me ask you this as a guitar player though. I mean, I know you're a country guy, so you gravitate, I'm sure, to the Telecaster.
100%. Yeah, that's what I play.
Which is, you know, in my opinion, probably a desert island guitar, right?
Yes. If you're for me, 100%. Yes.
If you can only have one, you should have a Telecaster. You know, I believe that personally. I think it's a great guitar. And that, you know, it's funny. I was chatting with John Five, who's now with, you know, yes, Motley Crue not that long
ago. Yeah. Catching some videos. It sounds great, man. Yeah.
And I was asking him about his love for the Telecaster, because that's all he plays is the Telecaster. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know the story or not, but you know, he grew up on Hee-Haw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that was where, you know, his love and fast, he thought if you played guitar, that's what you had to play was the Telecaster. So is there anything about your Telecaster that is unique, or would you say that it's pretty traditional, pretty standard?
Ooh, sure. So I actually, have you ever heard of the company Han Guitars?
No, I haven't.
You haven't? Nope. He's a custom builder. And yeah, so I have a Han Telecaster. It's handmade. It's actually called a Model C. It's a Jim Campolongo signature guitar. And we made a record. Are you hip to Jim's stuff by chance?
I'm not.
No,
I'm not. No. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Do yourself a favor. Check out Jim Campolongo and the Honey Fingers. But anyway, incredible guitar player, probably my favorite guitar player in the world. So I have a Han Telecaster. It's based off his guitar. He has a 59. What's it called when it doesn't have the string through? It has none of the furls in the back. He goes through the bridge.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a Han. I change my pots. I use low friction Eddie Van Halen pots on my guitar. Cause I do you ever seen Danny Gatton when he rolls the volume or tone knob, or Roy Buchanan?
Right.
Yeah, I do that stuff. So I swap out my tone pots so I could do the fake pedal steel thing or the volume swell thing. But other than that, it's a stock Tele, yeah. Neck pickup, everything's stock. Whatever Chio Han put in that guitar is what I play. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to guess, just let me guess, you're probably going into a Fender amp of some sort.
Oh, I've got one of each, but yeah, I typically stick with them. Yes, I have one of each one. I'm a Princeton guy most of the time, though. Yeah. I love a Prince Blackface, Silverface. I don't care. They all sound great to me. Yeah, and they're relatively low volume, you know, so it fits the style of music. But yeah, I love a deluxe, love a twin too. You know, you can't go wrong with the Fender amp.
No, I tell you what, they got one of the best, you know, clean amps out there, in my opinion. You know, I mean, there's only a couple of people that make a really, really nice, how would you word it? Chimey. That's not sure. Right. Chimey, mm-hmm. Chimey, clean tone, man. It's just absolutely brilliant. You know, it's hard to match unless you get a matchless.
Yeah, all those things rock. Yeah.
Yeah. Little Walter. Have you played Little Walter yet?
I have not played a Little Walter, but I've heard plenty of Steel Cats use them. Yeah. They sound great. Yeah.
Yeah. I use a Little Walter 310 cabinet. He makes one of the only 310 cabinets. It's absolutely amazing. Just mm-hmm. a great, great amp. Great amp. So, so in country music, you're probably not using no pedals since you're doing your swells with your pinky. Or your finger on your thing, you're probably not using a volume pedal.
No, nope. I'm pretty basic rig. I do really like slapback delays. I mean, I've been through the gamut of those pedals, but I'm stick with the DD3 or the green one. I always forget the name of this pedal. You know, the little green pedal that does the carbon copy.
Oh, the carbon copy. Yeah, the MXR.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, it's a little, you know, it degrades as the delay goes. I like that one a lot. Phaser for the Wayland stuff. Yeah. But yes, honestly, the most expensive pedal I got is a Peterson tuner. I've spent like $200-$300 on my tuner. Yeah, but it's, yeah.
So your tuner, can you calibrate your tuner?
Yeah, it does. Have you ever heard of the Peterson company? They're great. Yeah, they do sweet tunings, you know, so like they're fractions sharper flat on each string. So it sounds good with the whole band. I bought it because I'm a steel player too. So it's a multi-purpose tuner. So it does sweet tuning for the guitar and the pedal steel. But yeah, it's a rad pedal if you're interested in tuning real good.
Yeah. I've actually endorsed by Go-Go Tuners. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but
I'll have to check them out.
Yeah, they're really nice. You can calibrate them and everything. I mean, the thing that I like about them is that, you know, besides being precise, like what you're talking about, is the I can see it from anywhere on. You know, if I'm around my pedal board, you know, within a 10 feet, 15 feet, whatever, I can see that thing. So if I hit a note and, you know, I want to put it in the tune, I can see it. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm old, you know.
So. Yeah, it's got a big screen on there. Yeah,
it says like that. No, we're not that big. Well, I think I got one here. Hang on.
Yeah, sure.
These are the two I have. This one right here.
Oh, it's really wide. That is rad.
Yeah, this is the one.
That's awesome.
This one's that's normally on my main board, and then I have one like this.
Yeah.
But you can see how big those LED screens are.
They're huge.
The thing lights up. You know, it's like it's really dirty. I've taken my board apart and redoing it. But, you know, it's got DC in and out, you know.
Yeah.
For power, and you can calibrate it and stuff like that. You can't calibrate. You can
go ahead.
Yeah, you can use it to power a couple of pedals if you wanted to, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Just depends on what it is. But a buddy of mine owns the company, and he's got people like Marcus Miller and Victor Wooten and Cesaro and all these cats that are using his saying. And when he sent me one, I was just blown away simply because of I could see it. Mm-hmm. It's like, but yeah, you gotta have a great tuner, man. It's like some people will just buy those cheap ones they clip on their headstock.
Yeah, the Snarks. Yeah.
I mean, I don't get it, you know. It's like I don't get it because it's you can't get in the tune fast enough, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And if the four is buzzing, you know, it'll pick up
yeah
any instrument, and it takes forever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. So you guys are out on tour. Where are you at right now?
We're in Nashville for the week.
Oh, that's right. You're in Nashville. You're in Nashville for the week. And that.
Yeah.
And where are you going from there?
Oh my goodness. Pretty much all of the Southern United States. I'm pretty sure we're in Louisiana, North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Texas, all over. So I can't remember specific dates because we're going all over the place. It's a day by day thing.
Right.
You just go
where they tell you, where they're pointing. It's like that. So, you know, in order to stay, you know, on top of your game in that, what is it that you do on a regular basis, you know, in order to keep yourself sharp and fresh as a guitar player?
Oh yeah, man. I always go back to my favorite players and I steal things. I'm a huge pedal steel, and I love the pedal steel guitar more than pretty much any other instrument. I love it more than guitar almost, but where I get all my inspiration from, I go and I steal Buddy Emin licks or Jimmy Day licks or these great pedal steel players, and I transcribe them for the 6-string guitar, man, and I have a blast doing it. And there's like endless amounts of things to learn from different cats. It's so like I transcribe old Hank Garland tunes, Jimmy Bryant tunes. These are jazz country guys from the early days of country music before it was what it became. Yeah, man, there's just endless amounts of things to learn. But I'm a guy that likes to steal and then like reinterpret, you know.
Right.
I've been doing that's pretty much been my philosophy from the beginning, playing guitar. Yeah.
Well, you know what? You know, we talked about David Gilmour a little bit ago. And man, you want to I think that he is an amazing lap steel player.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful. You're playing that old Fender. I can't believe he keeps the thing in tune.
Oh man, it's so beautiful. It sounds so good. And that I got a buddy in St. Louis named Steve Scorfina. Steve Scorfina was an original member for REO Speedwagon, and Steve is a huge lap steel player. He absolutely loves the lap steel. He's got those old frying pans. I think they're Rickenbackers. That sound right? The
ones
round or steel and they're round.
Yep. That's right.
He's got a couple of those, a bunch of those that he brings. I love the sound of it. I love once again, I wish that, you know, that's something I wish I could do.
You totally can.
Yeah, I know.
It's easily.
Who's got time?
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, I enjoyed what I heard of the album, you know, from Josh. I definitely really enjoyed your YouTube channel in that.
Oh, thanks.
You know, I think you're a fantastic player, man. And I think, you know, the sky's going to be the limits. You know, you just got to get out there and hustle, and, you know, you'll be surprised where you'll be the next Brent Mason. You'll be the guy they're calling.
Nah. Oh, I don't know if I'll ever be that good, but dang, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
No, you're a great player, man. I wish you all the best on this tour and with the album. And, you know, you're ever in the Chicago area, you know, make sure that you you email me and that, and I'll come out and see you guys, okay?
Awesome, man. I will do.
I won't sit in, though.
I'll have to invite you up then.
I'm going to watch.
Put you on the spot. Afar.
I'm going to watch from afar with binoculars going, oh, my God. Anyway, it was an absolute pleasure talking with you, Brian. I wish you all the best, my friend.
Oh, thanks so much, Jimmy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you take care of yourself, okay?
Yeah.
All right.